You're listening to the Foul Ball Area podcast with Matthew Atkins, now available on Spotify, SoundCloud, Podbean, and Apple Podcasts. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the latest episode of the Foul Ball Area podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Atkins, and I'm pleased to be joined once again by my unofficial official co-host, Trey Lyle, all the way from Kansas. Trey joins us for another edition of Foul Ball Area. How are you doing, Trey?
I'm good, you know, just at home right now. Got to be at work soon again, you know, on this reduced schedule. But life is good, you know, living, going to work, trying to find some normalcy. But glad to be talking to you again. Glad to be back on the pod. The co-host is back.
Glad to hear it. How are you staying busy out there in Kansas, trying to find things to do during quarantine so you don't go completely crazy?
You know, definitely. Play a round of golf yesterday, a little alone time for me, kind of relaxing, and then luckily radio is deemed essential, and so it's been pretty cool to go to the radio station, and our news team, who's working really hard right now with what's going on, as our radio station is like the prime news source in our area for our area. So I'm just a guy who talks about country music and holidays and in the afternoons, and they're doing the hard work, so trying to support them as much as I can and ask whatever needs to be done, get done.
Well, that's good. Obviously, you know, news is an essential job in these times, and even though you're not part of the news team, you're still doing good work over there in Kansas, and also getting out and playing golf. That's good to be able to have a little bit of recreation in these crazy times. I went out over to a friend's house the other day, played a little bit of catch, probably threw baseball for about an hour, and it was probably the first time that I had thrown baseball in about a year, and so my arm is still kind of sore from that. My shoulder, I woke up the other day, and my shoulder didn't want to get out of bed with me.
Yeah, I'm right with you. My left shoulder is not feeling great. My back hurts a little bit. My legs were really sore yesterday, but those are a little bit better, so.
Well, let's get into a little bit of baseball talk, but before we do that, I want to remind everyone to follow Foul Ball Area on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Stay up to date with everything that's going on in the podcast and the blog, and make sure to subscribe on Spotify, iTunes, or Podbean, whichever platform you listen to the podcast on. Make sure to subscribe and share it with your friends so that we can get the word out there about Foul Ball Area. But let's dive into a little bit of baseball talk. There's not a whole lot going on, but there's still some news, especially in summer leagues. I've talked about collegiate summer leagues before. I've spent a couple years working in summer league baseball. It's something that I love very much. It's a great thing for the players, the coaches, the communities that these leagues operate in. And due to the COVID-19 pandemic, we're in danger of not having very many summer leagues operate this summer. Already two have canceled: the Valley Baseball League right here in Virginia and the Golden State Collegiate Baseball League out in California. It's an 8-team league in San Jose, California. They canceled their 2020 season. So two leagues have canceled. Other leagues have released statements saying that they're continuing to look at the situation. Certain leagues, such as the Northwoods League up in the Midwest and Wisconsin, Minnesota area, they said that they're not going to be able to have their opening day on the scheduled date. They were scheduled to begin on May 26th, but Wisconsin's stay-at-home order goes through May 26th, so they're not going to be able to have that opening day. So they're looking at a number of contingency plans. So all these leagues are really being affected by the COVID-19 pandemic. We're not sure what their seasons are going to look like. Some of them not sure if they're going to be able to have a season, and it's really sad because I've written about this before. I've talked about this before. I really love summer league baseball. It provides a lot of people with a lot of great opportunities. And if we're not able to have those leagues this summer, it's going to be really sad.
Yeah, and financially, these leagues might not be able to sustain growth. I know we're going to talk a little bit about minor league baseball later on the pod, but it's kind of the similar situation there. If these teams don't have a season, their revenue is kind of shot. So it's going to have a long effect. And we both have friends who are supposed to call games. I know our buddy and recent guest, David Cunningham's season, he was supposed to do play-by-play for in that league. You're talking about, I think, for the Virginia Pilots, correct? That was the team?
The Peninsula Pilots.
Peninsula Pilots. It's in Virginia. But that team, obviously. And then someone we know in the Northwoods League, Evan Hughes, has been for the St. Cloud Rocks the last 2 years, has been their play-by-play guy. And he's, I believe, heading back up there for a third season. And another guy, Billy Partan, who graduated with us, had work in the Northwoods League. So definitely experience in that area. And it just, it's going to affect these communities on a deeper level. Like, it's kind of, there's the, and it's everything going on with sports right now. Like, you have the micro level of sports are canceled, they're not having, but there's a macro level to this of, like, a community and an economy is affected by this. Like, you look at just, like, today, like, a baseball story, Derek Jeter is basically foregoing his $5 million salary to the Marlins to make sure the operations team is paid through the end of May. So financially, it could have dire effects for these leagues that provide a great experience for college players to get kind of a pro feel to it and to play year-round, which is kind of just the feel of baseball. You play whenever, and so if you're a college athlete, you're trying to get as many reps as you can. You go from your college season, and then you head to some local town where you play in a college league, and you get more experience and get your name out there so you can make the meet, and then you go on and go on.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you hit the nail on the head there talking about the experience that it gives everyone. The guys like us, I love summer league baseball because of the years that I've spent working in it as a broadcaster, writer, intern, doing pretty much whatever. But the players, you know, it gets them plenty of experience. It gets them exposure in front of major league scouts. It gets their name out there so that those of them that are good enough, they can go on to the next level. It's great for the coaches to get them a little bit of extra experience. A lot of them are college coaches at some small schools throughout the country, and they come to these summer leagues to coach for the summer, so it gets them more experience. And then the communities, I mean, it's a great way for a community to come together on a summer evening and just spend a summer night together watching baseball. It's great family fun, it's inexpensive, and it's a great way to spend your summer watching these collegiate baseball leagues. And like you said, a lot of these teams are going to have tough financial impacts from this because a lot of them don't really operate on a profit. They kind of operate at cost. And so having a whole summer where they're not bringing in any money, it's going to be tough for them. And, you know, it's going to be sad seeing what teams or leagues may not bounce back from a missed 2020 season.
Yeah, definitely. And this virus, I think, in general, and it's going to have a trickle-down effect for us for a while. And I think, and I'm not sitting here saying decisions weren't made and we're not trying to politicize, but it's just naturally going to have a trickle-down effect forever because it stopped everything. It basically put the world on pause for now. We're running on 2 months. And I think there's these minor things that where it has an effect on, and Summer League Baseball is one of them. Like, you're going to still have Major League Baseball. You're still going to have Minor League Baseball, but you might not have a team that's lives in the Appalachian League that lives in this small town and literally operates as a team that makes, you say, break even. Let's say their budget's $2 million, and that's, I guess, a stretch. I'm not a financial expert. I don't know these things. But they make $2 million in the summer, whether it be through ticket revenue, ad sales. Like, ticket revenue's gone now. Like, for sure. Yeah. No matter what team plays, you're going to have to make it on ad sales. Well, if I'm a small business is failing right now, and that's where you get a lot of your ad sales for these small teams. That's going to be it's tragic. It's what it is. Like, we've talked about this already. It's awful. Like, the effects of this is going to happen. You're going to be in a likely scenario, I hate to say this, where, and we're going to talk about smaller leagues, where you're going to have less teams come next summer, where less kids get more, it becomes more selective.
Yeah, it really is going to have an effect on every single person involved. And, you know, I've said it pretty much every episode that we put out recently, but you really got to encourage people to, you know, do what they can to stay home and stop the spread of this virus so that we can have a chance of having summer league baseball this year. I know I've said those two leagues, the Valley League and the Golden State Collegiate Baseball League, have already canceled Other leagues have released statements saying they're looking at the situation, they're looking at contingency plans. Most of them are still planning on playing their seasons, but it's possible that they could get canceled or shortened or altered in some severe way, that it's not going to be a normal season. So just like everyone else is telling you, I'm going to tell you, stay home, wash your hands, don't go out in public unless you absolutely have to, slow the spread of this virus so that we can have baseball this summer.
Absolutely. I think staying at home is kind of the only thing you can do right now. Listen to the medical experts out there. I think that's the best thing you can do, is just listen to people that know what they're doing, because Matt and I don't know any. Like, I don't know. We're not scientists. And
no, we're not.
Two journalist kids that like to talk about sports. And so stay at home, because this is going to have a greater effect. Like, and like, if you think about this, if you want to talk about college kids right now, college baseball players, a big looming thing over college athletics right now is if college football happens or not. If it happens in the spring, that's going to affect college baseball because it's not going to be as popular. But if college football, if a school misses out on college football, there are going to be, and I'm not going to say baseball is going to be cut, but there are going to be a lot of teams that are going to get cut. And it's already starting to happen. ODU wrestling got cut, and I know that was one on the
Cincinnati
FBS level.
Cincinnati men's
soccer got cut. Without college football, it's going to be incredible. So there's more to come. And so if you stay at home and you love the game of baseball and you want it back, if you love sports and you want it back, you have to stay at home. I know it sucks, but you just do.
It's what it is. It's what it is. Talked a lot about collegiate summer leagues. Another type of league that is in danger right now is the minor leagues. There's been a plan going around for a while now. I think this plan came out in October to get rid of 40 minor league baseball teams, to contract the minor leagues to 120 teams, get rid of 40 of them, and now there's news coming out from Baseball America that Minor League Baseball as an organization is meeting with Major League Baseball this week, and they're expected to signal their support of this plan. A lot of people have been opposed to this because it's going to be getting rid of 40 minor league baseball teams, and these are teams that provide people with jobs that, like we said, with collegiate summer leagues, these minor league teams provide fans with entertainment. They're great for the communities. And now they're in danger of having their affiliations cut with Major League Baseball. And so their future is kind of up in the air. Are some of them going to be able to be an independent league? Or some of them might just disappear completely? No one really knows. But it's a really scary time for these 40 teams that are on the chopping block in Minor League Baseball.
Yeah, and I think my understanding of this is it's going, because there's like, if you look at it, there's like low rookie, high rookie, AA, AAA, and it's going to basically eliminate, take rookie ball and make it one, and then you have a single A team, a double A team, and a triple A team. So it's going to be these teams that are on the lowest of the level, like a Pulaski Yankees back near Southwest Virginia is a rookie ball team. The Bluefield Blue Jays is another rookie ball team. So those are the teams that are going to be affected the most from this, because you're going to eliminate half of your rookie league team. I've worked in a minor league baseball team. I worked for the Flying Squirrels for one summer, and it was awesome. It was cool to just go to the park and kind of experience it. And baseball, and if you want to look at the history of baseball in Richmond, you had the Richmond Braves, and then before that you had Richmond Virginians, which was an affiliate of the Yankees all the way back then. And so minor league baseball has been in some of these teams for decades, centuries for that reason. So it's going to affect it very, very much. So I think, again, like, this has been a thing for a year. Like, I think we've talked about this before, like minor league baseball cutting back and Major League Baseball wanting to cut it back. I saw a drastic change, and I think you kind of, at this point, if you're minor league baseball, you want to protect as much as you can. And if they're going to cut, rather cut 40 teams than 100 teams.
Yeah, you spent a summer working in minor league baseball. I spent a summer actually with the Pulaski Yankees. It was my first experience in the baseball world, an internship with Pulaski the summer after freshman year of college. So we each have experience in minor league baseball, and it is a great thing for the towns that they're in, especially the small towns. And I do love the Richmond Flying Squirrels. I like going to games at the Diamond, but these small towns that don't really have anything else, like Pulaski or Bluefield or Princeton, those towns in Southwest Virginia and West Virginia and North Carolina and Tennessee, their minor league teams are a big part of what drives their economy during the summer every year. And if you look at the plan, Pulaski is actually the only team in the Appalachian League that survives this plan. And I think it's because they put so much money into renovating their stadium and building up the organization there in Pulaski. They're actually going to survive this plan. The rest of the Appalachian League is gone from minor league baseball. And so I don't know what's going to happen to them. It's a really historic league, historic teams. I don't know if they'll reorganize as an independent league, but the Pulaski Yankees are the one organization that will survive this plan to cut 40 minor league baseball teams. So that's going to be interesting. See what happens to them if they get a move up to maybe short season single A or just regular single A. I don't know what's going to happen, but Pulaski will survive. The rest of the Appalachian League, they're gone, and it's going to be sad. I don't know. I guess minor league baseball as an organization has to kind of support this plan because they don't really have any other option. I mean, Major League Baseball kind of holds all the cards.
Especially from a financial standpoint, and I think it just sucks. Like, it's something that you don't want to happen, but you can't really, like, say, oh, this is a travesty, because, one, we're financially in dire times, just because of when everything's shut down, you have no revenue coming in. And this is something that kind of everyone who's been connected to baseball has seen for years, and I think all I can say is, like, the small communities suck. Like, our good friend Brady Hess was the PA announcer for the Bluefield Blue Jays, and he talked about how he got to see Vlad Jr. play rookie ball and got to meet Vladimir Guerrero. Like, that doesn't happen if there's no Bluefield Blue Jays.
Yeah.
Like, those moments. Like, I remember, and obviously a double-A team, but I remember as a kid, after I played my season in Little League, I got to go to the Diamond, like, walk on the field. Like, those memories are long-lasting. And so, and that happens with minor league baseball because there's only a certain amount of teams that get a major sports team. You have to be in a certain market. But a lot of teams, a lot of these small towns get a minor league team, and it builds a fan base. Like, the reason there's so many Braves fans in Virginia is because of the Richmond Braves.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't have Braves fans as far and wide as you do in Virginia without the Richmond Braves. You know, minor league baseball is just so important to so many people. What a morbid first 20 minutes of the podcast talking about summer leagues and minor leagues getting cut off this summer and in the future. What,
being a little negative.
Yeah.
Let's cheer up and pivot.
Yeah, let's talk about something a little happier. Last week we talked about Joey Votto and his Hall of Fame chances, whether he misses the 2020 season due to, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic, and if there is no 2020 season, whether he still has a shot at making the Hall of Fame. I think we both agreed he's pretty much a lock for the Hall of Fame. Today we're going to talk about a different Joe. A Joe who is already retired, the former Minnesota Twins catcher and first baseman Joe Mauer. He retired in 2018. Is he a Hall of Famer? I believe he is. He was one of, if not the best catcher in the league during his time. A long career, a great contact hitter, great at getting on base. I think he's a lock. First ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you could argue him or Buster Posey were the best catcher over the last 10 years. I think that's kind of maybe the two. Like, Mauer was one of the best catchers to be a hitter. Like you talk about the Piazzas of the world as, like, a hitting catcher. Like, that Mauer was just as good. I mean, Mauer was very consistent through his years. I think he obviously played on some bad twin team, but he also played on some really good Twins teams. So he got an MVP. I agree. I think, I don't know about a first ballot, but I think if you look at who's become a first ballot lately, I think Bauer's going to, he's going to have a legitimate chance at it. And if he doesn't get it his first year, he should get it his second.
The Jaws metric, which is a way of measuring how likely a player is to make it into the Hall of Fame, for the average Hall of Fame catcher, their Jaws score is 44. Mauer's is 47. His career batting average is 306. His career on-base percentage is 388. And both of those numbers are higher than Johnny Bench, Yogi Berra, Roy Campanella, Carlton Fisk, and Ivan Rodriguez, among others.
I think we're just picking hairs here because defensively, it was great, too. Like, he was a three-time Gold Glove. He had a three-time batting title, five-time Silver Slugger, six-time All-Star. I mean, he has the accolades to make it. And also, you think about this. Born and raised in St. Paul, Minnesota, played for the hometown team. I mean, there's a lot of pressure that comes with that. Very few have really kind of been able to do that. I mean, like, you think about it, obviously, in basketball, there's LeBron, who was from Akron, Ohio, and won a title for Cleveland. But to, like, play for the hometown team like he did and give the Twins the most success they had in the 2000s, like, by far, he was their best player. And so I think he gets in the Hall of Fame. I mean, I think there's no question of that. I think it's the first ballot, and I think he'll get heavy consideration, and I think if not, he'll get it on the second time.
Yeah, I think that is really the only thing that could be debated is which ballot he gets in on. I think everyone would pretty much agree he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. He's got the numbers. The only thing that hurts him is his power numbers, but you know, his average, his on-base percentage are higher than all those other Hall of Famers that I mentioned. His wins above replacement from his time playing are higher than that of Victor Martinez and Yadier Molina. He won an MVP. And like you said, playing for his hometown team, that's kind of like the storybook career. To be as good as he was for his hometown team, I think the only thing that could have made that better is if he was able to win a World Series for him.
I think we kind of summed it up perfectly with the Mauer Power, I think top 10 nickname of all time. That was pretty great. Mauer Power is a great nickname. He's from Minnesota. I had to get that in there. So I think, yeah, he's a Hall of Famer. If I had a ballot, which I'm nowhere close to, nowhere deserve one, I'd probably put it in on the first ballot. It also, it depends on who, like, again, it's, there's so many factors. I think it depends on who he's with, but I think, I'm trying to remember who else retired that year, but I'm pretty sure it would have been just him. Correct? In 18, maybe A-Rod, but A-Rod's not going to get on the first ballot. No, A-Rod didn't retire in 18. He retired earlier than that.
Let me look, see who else will be on the ballot. Adrian Beltre, Victor Martinez, Chase Utley, and David Wright.
Oof. That could be. Adrian Beltre will get some consideration. Wright will get some consideration.
Victor Martinez, he was a great catcher too. I think he could make it in, you know, eventually. I don't know. That is a pretty loaded ballot there. Beltre is definitely going to be in. That ballot, that'll be a pretty loaded ballot, plus anyone from previous years who hasn't made it in yet. So, I don't know. It'll be tough. Yeah. All right. So, Joe Mauer, future Hall of Famer. You heard it here first, folks. You been watching any classic baseball games since you've been quarantined?
So, the first sporting event I rewatched was actually a baseball game. It was the 2016 World Series, Game 7. In my opinion, the best baseball game I've ever watched. So many ups and downs, and then the story behind it. Obviously, you had the Cubs and having to win a World Series in 104 years, and the Indians, I think they were at 67. They were at a lot, too.
And yeah, it was a long time.
You have these two teams, and they were really good. I mean, like, both these teams were really good. And this game had everything. It had a leadoff home run by Dexter Fowler, which kind of no one forgets about in the Game 7 and just had a leadoff home run. Obviously, David Ross, iconic home run in his final game because he had to come in for Lester. The Cubs played three catchers in that game, as a matter of fact, because obviously once Lester came in, who pitched really well in relief. But Obviously, the weird decision to bench Kyle Hendricks in, I think, the fifth inning after he was pitching a freaking gem. And then, obviously, Chapman, after who been worked a lot, gives up that lead late to Rajay Davis. And then you have the rain delay, and then the Cubs come at and win it. And I think it also showed the brilliance of, like, in my opinion, I think Buck and Smoltz is a great booth. Whatever you might say about Joe Buck, I think it showed the brilliance of those two working together, because John Smoltz breaks down the game better than anyone in baseball. And I think Joe Buck just has a great feel for the moment. And I think he does that in football, and I think he does that in baseball too very well. Like, people, I can't believe people criticized his final call. He goes, "The Cubs win the World Series," and then he just doesn't talk. And it's something we've both been taught about, is live in the moment, let the moment breathe, and being quiet on television is always a good thing, and letting it just play out. This is a team that is the laughing stock of baseball. It was the Chicago Cubs. They're the Cleveland Browns of baseball. Like, that's kind of what they are. And so them winning the World Series is very emotional. So that was the game I've watched probably. I watched back a couple of Yankees highlights, but there's not been, like, a lot of good Yankees games in the last decade I could really, where the Yankees come out on top, that I've been kind of wanting to relive. What about you?
Yeah, I watched the 2016 World Series as well. That, I would agree with you. I think that's definitely up there as one of the greatest baseball games of all time. I don't know that it is. I also watched the 2011 World Series. I think it was Game 6 between the Rangers and the Cardinals. It was in St. Louis at Busch Stadium. Wild game, all kinds of lead changes, and then in extra innings, David Freese comes up and hits a walk-off home run. And again, another Joe Buck call, a classic Joe Buck call, reminiscent of his father's call in the World Series, where he just says, "We'll see you tomorrow night." So I think that was definitely, I don't know, top five baseball game of all time, if not even higher than that, maybe top three. But definitely the 2016 World Series was a great one as well. The other night, I didn't watch the whole thing, but 2004 ALCS Game 4 was on. I know you probably don't like that one. greatest comeback of all time, the 2004 ALCS.
Yeah, I mean, it was. What can I say? The freaking Red Sox came back, all right? Like, yes, I know. I have to accept it. Like, accepting... I'm not stupid, but it is.
Yeah, I didn't watch the whole game.
And I had to think about 2016, people forget about it. And it was kind of ironic. It was a reverse of the finals, where the Cleveland team came back from 3-1. This time, the Cubs come back from 3-1 down to win the World Series. So, another great comeback as well.
Yeah, coming back from 3-1 is pretty impressive. But coming back from 3-0, that's even more impressive.
Yes, it is. I remember.
The other night, I actually watched Fever Pitch. It's kind of a baseball movie. It's more like a rom-com with baseball in it, but it's Jimmy Fallon and Drew Barrymore.
Yeah, I know the movie.
Yeah, it's actually a good movie. But the final scene in the movie takes place at Game 4 of the 2004 ALCS, and so I had watched that, and then the next night, that game was on FS1, so... I didn't watch the whole game that night, but, you know, I knew what happened because I had just had a refresher the night before. David Ortiz walk-off home run. There's actually a great documentary about that series, 4 Days in October. I can see the pain in your face right now. I should just stop talking about this probably.
When's the last time the Braves went to the World Series?
99, I think.
Did they win it?
Nope.
Who did they lose to?
Yankees.
Thank you. All right.
Yeah.
And I like the Braves. And you just had to keep hitting me. You know,
the Braves have dealt with their share of crushing playoff losses. The 2012 wild card game, the infamous infield fly rule against the Cardinals. I mean, that was just the dumbest call in baseball history. And then you got this year against the Cardinals in game 5 of the NLDS when they go down 10-0 in the first inning. I mean, I've dealt with tough losses in the playoffs too.
I'm an Eagles fan. Wait, we've all dealt. Both of us, as a graduate, slash fans of our whole life of Virginia Tech have dealt with tough losses. We can move past this. Like,
yeah,
this is kind of like, these are jabs. We've had gut punches.
Yeah.
People can say two words to me and about a Virginia Tech game and I can just collapse.
What's that? Matt Ryan?
Matt Ryan.
Knew it.
Like,
yeah.
No, something bad is from that same season because Tech finished third in the BCS. They re-aired the Orange Bowl that year when they played Kansas and lost. Sean Glennon was the quarterback. I'm pretty sure that was Tyrod's freshman year, and they were still splitting time, which baffles me. But, and I know we're going into football, but that played. And I was just like, I have to follow Kansas football on Twitter for just making sure I'm up to date for when I had my scoreboard show. And I was just seeing those tweets, and I'm like, oh, gut punch, because I thought if Matt Ryan didn't pull off a trick, Virginia Tech most likely would have been the national title game that year. And probably would have lost, but it'd have been cool. Because I could have remembered a national title game instead of being two.
Yeah. Yep. So we've dealt with tough losses, all of us. Yeah. Ending the podcast on a little bit of a morbid note as well. Well, we had a little bit of happiness in the middle, but some negative at the beginning and at the end of this week's edition of the podcast.
Stay happy, find something fun to do at home, and thank you so much for tuning in to the Foul Ball Area.
Yep, we'll be back next week. For Trey Lyle, I'm Matthew Atkins. Thanks for listening.